Justin, it finally happened.
You were constipated and then you pooped?
I'm never constipated. I eat a lot of fiber.
Oh, but like, but that's like a feeling though, right?
Oh yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
I got a Dark Souls tattoo.
No.
And here's what I'm worried about.
Okay.
I'm worried that I don't have the cred for it.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
So let me guess. What was it? Is it a bonfire?
That is part of it.
Okay. Is it a... Well, I don't have anything else to add to the bonfire.
So it is. So let me just preface. It's not done. Okay. It's going to be about 3 to 4 sessions. Okay. So we are in the early stages of it. But it's like my whole ass. My whole ass arm here.
Whoa. So
this is the Firekeeper lady.
Whoa.
Dark Souls 3. There's no shading done on this. It's just a guy sitting at the bonfire. Oh,
that is awesome.
Thank you. Here's the problem. Like I said, I'm worried that I'm going to get, like, someone's going to, like, cred call me. You know what I mean by that? Like I love Dark Souls 3. I love Dark Souls 3, I've decided. Right. Clearly.
Okay.
But I'm worried that someone's going to be like, oh, but yeah, but like, I couldn't tell you how to make like an intelligence build or faith build or whatever.
Okay, listen, like, people get tattoos of stupid shit all the time, and they don't have to be, like, experts on that stupid shit they put on them.
That's fair. I guess I mean, like, but people in, like, the Dark Souls FromSoft circle are so, like, you gotta know everything.
But
you know
what
I mean?
If they get tattoos, I'd be shocked, you know what I mean?
I guess that's fair.
They'd have to leave their deep, dark basement dungeons that they live in.
I guess that's fair. I guess I do have the thing of like, motherfucker, I bled for Dark Souls. Yeah. What have you ever done for it?
Yeah, you know what? You got good at being really good at Dark Souls.
Did you see the, I think it's like a streamer or someone that made like a vest that electrocutes them every single time they take damage in Elden Ring?
Cool. That's awesome. They should get a tattoo of that.
That's the thing. That's hardcore, man.
Yeah, that's the only person who deserves it right there.
Yeah,
But that tattoo, that actual design. So is the thing on your shoulder, is that part of, is that a different thing?
Or is so it's, you can sort of see there's like little like wavy things here. There's going to be, there's like a big solar eclipse that happens at the end of Dark Souls 3. And so this is going to sort of like turn into that, get like really wavy and stuff. Right now they just had to like black it all out and like, that's like step one, and then it'll be to like blend it all in and whatever.
It might surprise the listeners, but I don't have your body memorized yet. But
yet.
Like,
yeah, wait, not yet. Are you serious?
Not yet.
I have yours memorized.
Like,
I close my eyes and I see it.
Well, I mean, like every like spot of your tattoos and stuff like that.
I got you. Gotcha.
But this seems to be like quite the massive one.
This is quite a massive one. Yes, because I got like my forearm done last year.
Yeah.
I got my hand done this year, and I've just been looking at like the top of my arm, and I'm like, it doesn't look silly, but it's a little odd that I didn't go the other way down, because most people start up top and then work their way down. And so I was like, I want to fill this out. So I was thinking about like, well, what could be a cool, big sort of cohesive piece? What do I have a love for that? Like, I think would like also like look mature, because, you know, it's on my arm. So it's like, it's visible, look mature, but also be something that is like interesting that I'm into, you know what I mean? So I was like, oh, I could do Lord of the Rings, but I was like, Lord of the Rings is on my forearm. So it's like, well, we'll go Dark Souls 3.
Wow. Lord of the Rings versus Dark Souls.
Lord of the Rings 1 is already here.
Oh, no, but I'm saying like there needs to be like a death battle about that.
I would, if FromSoft did a Lord of the Rings game.
Yeah.
Be an all-timer for me.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine that?
Yes. Yes, I can.
Like, that would be amazing.
Like, boss fights against like the Nazgul.
And then what if George R.R. Martin writes it?
Sure, get the RRs together.
Yeah, RR.
Combining brains, you know? Mm-hmm. Is that why he did that? George RR for like JRR Tolkien?
I don't know why everyone calls him Railroad. Is that like a significant thing? George Railroad Martin? Is that like not a loving term? Is that like a positive term?
Yeah, so I've heard this, like railroading in like D&D is like someone who makes you do the thing that the DM wants. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So if it's like, oh, I try to do this, and they just automatically make it fail, whatever.
Yeah.
So, and that is like largely considered like it's not very good, because like D&D, the fun of it is about like, well, what do the players do? You know what I mean? But I don't know. Yeah. Like Railroad, he was writing the fucking books.
Yeah. He's the one.
It's
been a while since that last book has been expected to be out.
Is that right? Like, has it really been that long? I don't know anything about it. Game of Thrones.
Yeah, it's been quite some time. He's been rumored on working on it. I don't know if it was in the last version of the book that I read, but there's like a chapter released from it. And
is it gonna be like the final book?
No, probably not.
No.
He's got a little bit to go. A little bit.
Was it like were the other books, were there like really long gaps between them?
Not to this level. Like right now, the first one came out 96, 98, 2000, 2005, and 2011. So there was longer amount of them through as he went on. But like, I think one of the problems here, we go talking about fucking there's two more planned. Here we're talking about A Song of Ice and Fire. But like, it's like a kind of, I think the reason Game of Thrones is so great is because it starts off with all these people together. Like, it's like the Big Bang, right? And then all of a sudden they explode out and they go to different parts across the kingdom. And then near the end of it, they all start coming together, except I don't think he did a very good job of trying to gather everyone together, because there's so many stories out there that it's just this huge thing he's trying to connect together that it's become unmanageable. And I think one thing that the TV series did well, because obviously he didn't finish writing it, he kind of told them where it ended and they kind of filled in the gaps. They did
and that was hated, right?
I don't know if it was, they didn't
hate the ending of the show.
They didn't hate what they did. I think a lot of people hated how quickly all of it happened. It felt like they just were kind of rushing through some of the bigger moments. And in retrospect, I've gone back and watched a lot of that last season, and I actually like appreciate what they did, but it became that thing when people are like, that's not how I would have done it. Like there's a character who was like a good guy the whole time. This is not a spoiler, 'cause I'm trying to be vague. They were a good guy the whole time. And then basically there's a moment where they suddenly become a bad guy at the end. And it just kind of happened without any predicate to it. It was just like, I understand why this character became a bad person, but looking at the camera and then gruffing and getting mad for 3 seconds isn't enough of a reason to do it.
That's fair. That's fair. I just watched Transformers 1.
Same thing.
Similar sort of deal.
Yeah.
It's very good. Very, very good.
No.
What is this?
Shia LaBeouf. That's his acting style.
It's Hitbox! What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to Hitbox episode number Sandwich Wiki. Give us the cube. I don't know. What is the number? 215. My name is Peter Hunspitek. Joining me, as always, is my wonderful friend and co-host, Sandwich Wiki, Justin Witwicky Makovich. That's what we call him. Justin, how are you? That's actually very funny. The no-no-nos. That was hysterical, even.
It's Shia LaBeouf. I used to be a pretty big fan of that Even Stevens television show. Are you familiar with
it? Sure.
That was my introduction to it. And then recently we went back and started to watch them, and I'm like, boy, this didn't age the same way I remembered it. As good anymore.
Got to watch Odd Todd.
Odd Todd?
I just made that up.
Oh.
Even Stevens. Anyway, go on.
Time out for a second. We're actually episode 214.
Episode number 214. Are we?
So you're looking at the document that says 215, right? That I put in there.
I am.
So we were both updating very different documents, I think.
Are we really? Oh, no.
Well, yeah. So
this is fun. This is going to be kind of a fun little thing. Yeah, 214, excuse me.
Wow, and it's just funny because at one point you were talking about the document and you were saying how, I think this is a good episode. And I was like, what's our lead story? Because I didn't have one on my document. It's just blank. And you're like, the 3-4-3 story. And I was like, oh, okay.
That's why you were like, spoilers, Justin played some Zelda Echoes of Wisdom. And I was like, yeah, I didn't put in the doc. Like, whatever, we'll get there, I suppose. Battling documents. Yeah, 214. Excuse me, Justin.
It's all right. I'm updating it. I'm putting it on 214. So we got this.
Wonderful.
We got this.
While you're doing that, Justin, let me give the listeners a quick taste of what's coming up. Here's a preview of this week's news. Metaphor: ReFantazio is here, and I played it. 343 Industries has gone through a rebrand, and this week in the Metacritic Roundup, there are horror remakes galore. Some good, some less good. Before we get to all of that and more, I want to give our listeners a quick reminder that they can join our Discord server. The link to that is in the description of this episode. They can also support us on Patreon at patreon.com/hitboxpod. Become a $1 podcast producer or a $3 deluxe podcast producer like Jay Knoll, GKS, and Josh Durham. Every single week, those deluxe podcast producers get an additional 30-minute bonus episode and get this episode ad-free. Like everyone else, because we don't have ads.
Oh, we can put an ad in. We can put an ad.
Sure.
This episode brought to you by
Minnesota.
Actually, Minnesota's fun. I was going to say brought to you by Ted Lasso, because I want them to sponsor this because they're coming out with a new season, even though they ended Ted Lasso pretty good.
I didn't watch the final season, watched about half of the seg. We talked about this. I will say I was listening to an interview with... not Dax Shepard. I confused the two. Dax Shepard and who's the main guy in Scrubs? Zach Braff.
Dak Prescott.
No, Zach Braff. And he was talking about how he directed some Ted Lasso. He directed the second episode. And he was like talking about how that is an interesting kind of proposition, because at that point, like you don't know what the show is yet, you know, but like you have the script, but you don't know like what it looks like how it feels, whatever. Anyway.
Is it okay? So it's Dak Shepard, right? Or is it
Dax, D-A-X.
Okay, because I called him Dak Shepherd once to my wife, and she goes, "It's Dax," and I was like, "Listen, Dak, Dax."
Yeah, I would say those are pretty similar, and also
it's dumb. Like,
I don't know this man.
Yeah. God forbid.
What were we saying? Oh, you can also support us on Twitter if that's more your style, at Hitbox Pod. Give us a follow there. Or rate this episode in your podcast player of choice. Justin, do you want to join me in the Metacritic Roundup?
Let's go!
Metacritic Roundup.
Huge week for video game releases. Justin, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 games in the Metacritic Roundup.
One, two, three, four, five. Everybody in the house, come on, let's ride to the liquor store around the corner.
We got to get the Mambo number 5 in there, because I thought that's where you're going with it.
I really like that. Is that that's Lou Bega?
Yes, Lou Bega, I believe it is.
I confused Lou Bega with... Oh, man. Okay, have you seen the Key and Peele sketch where they're doing charades? Or not charades, but it's like they're picking a name out of the hat and they gotta like describe who it is without saying their name.
Yep.
And so it's Key and Peele, and they're going like, E equals MC squared. He's like, Albert Einstein, Albert Einstein. Like, yeah. And they're going. He's like, it's Ricky Martin. He's like, he's actually gay, but everyone thinks he's straight. Me. No, he's a Latin pop star, and he's like, I'm not a Latin pop star. Lou Bega.
I love Key and Peele.
It's so fucking funny. So I went to we talked about this last week in our bonus episode. We're gonna get to the fucking Metacritic Roundup, I promise. And I went to that football game, and it just reminded me of that Key and Peele sketch where they do the like college football player names.
Yep.
And I love it so much because the story behind it is just hysterical. So Keegan Michael Key talking about it. He's like, I came into the office one day and I was like, Jordan, do you know there's a football player in college named DeBrickashaw Ferguson? they just decided to make him a bunch of random, because the names are crazy, dude.
Yeah.
DeBrickashaw Ferguson. Anyway,
there's a running back on the Panthers named Chubba Hubbard.
It's good. It's so good.
Chubba Hubbard running all over the field.
Chubba Hubbard and DeBrickashaw. It's good. It's so. Can I say though, DeBrickashaw? Incredible.
Oh,
word.
That's a
like,
great name
to say. DeBrickashaw. Like all of these sounds feel so good in your mouth. Anyway, let's talk about the game that I think we have least to say. Dragon Ball Sparking Zero. Justin, this is the latest Dragon Ball Z fighting game. It scored an 82 on the PlayStation 5, an 81 on the Xbox Series X, and an 82 on the personal computer. These are some pretty solid scores, especially for a fighting game. I know that the Dragon Ball fighting games tend to do pretty well. I also know that this is a, sort of a new era for the Budokai Tenkaichi fighting series, which is like the big, really popular Dragon Ball fighting game. I played this at Summer Game Fest knowing nothing about Dragon Ball. People like this game. Do you have any thoughts on this?
If I'm correct with this one, they kind of have like an adaptive story to it.
Yes.
So if you are a fan of Dragon Ball Z, you know how to play like the matches and like what happens and who does what in it. But theoretically, you can kind of rewrite the history and kind of change moments of the original by having a character win that wasn't supposed to win. So like the example that I was hearing about was in the Frieza Goku match, the first time they fight, you could theoretically have Frieza win that fight and then not like die in that die if you know anything about it, and it would kind of change the story encounters along the way. Again, I don't know how serious or significant that is, but I think there's enough to like kind of switch up the matchups enough to make it kind of cool and interesting. And as someone who's a pretty big fan of the earlier Dragon Ball Z series, I think this would be something that's pretty interesting to me. The problem is, I don't care what the story is, it's still kind of one of these fighting games that is not my cup of tea. With the you said the Budokai, right? It's a specific...
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know if that's my specific type of video game. But, I mean, Dragon Ball Z is huge. And if people like... people love
it. People are going nuts over this.
Yeah.
Even when I previewed it, I was like, listen, I don't know Dragon Ball, but like, I know that this seems like it's going to be the thing that a lot of people like. I can't speak to the quality of the fighting. I'm not a fighting game guy. I can't speak to the quality of like the cameos or whatever the fuck, like, cause I'm not a Dragon Ball guy, but like, this was obviously made like for fans of Dragon Ball. So like, that's what's kind of important. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, so there you go. I don't have much to say about this other than, like, happy for you guys, Dragon Ball fans. I think, like, Giant Ape Gohan or something like that was trending on Twitter because apparently there's a fight in the story mode that's, like, tough as nails that no one can beat. But, I'm not super sure, but I just think it's funny that, like, Giant Ape Gohan was trending on Twitter.
I mean, we've all been there, right?
Yeah, I was worried that he died. You know what I mean? Maybe got canceled.
Oh my god! So I just typed this.
Okay.
This is just like, did Gohan ever turn into a great ape? Something happened. This is on the Dragon Ball Wiki. It says blah blah blah. That night, Gohan, who is still atop the rock formation, wakes up and has to pee. He unexpectedly transforms into a great ape and goes on a rampage.
Fellas, we've all been there before, right? Got to pee.
We've all had to pee.
Aping it out, you know?
Yeah, all of a sudden, just out of nowhere. Man. Yeah. Man, that's, I'm looking at the video of it now. It's pretty cool. Yeah.
In the Metacritic roundup, Justin, DLC, Starfield, Shattered Space. This did not fare particularly well. On the Xbox Series X, scored a 59, and on the PC, a 61. These are not particularly flattering scores. A lot of the sort of conversation surrounding this is that... Here's a great little excerpt from the review on Game Rant written by, Mr. Dalton Cooper. At times I was blown. This is a 5 out of 10 review. At times I was blown away by Starfield, the shattered spaces, beautifully rendered new areas. But at other times my immersion was ruined by the annoying progression killing quest bugs and weird graphical oddities. The DLC is uneven to say the least, and there's something Starfield fans should take into consideration if deciding they should spend $30 on the expansion. $30 for a 4-hour main quest that sounds a bit steep, but the new weapons and side quests may make it worth the investment for diehard Starfield fans that simply want more, once the bugs are ironed out anyway. Future updates will likely make it a lot easier to recommend Starfield Shattered Space, but for now, fans may want to hold off until its more egregious bugs and glitches are addressed. Everyone's saying this is just more of what Starfield couldn't do. it's $30 for, again, a 4-hour main quest, nothing really, no new dialogue for a lot of the companions. it's still buggy. It's still exactly what Starfield is, and doesn't really like iterate on that at all. How do you feel about this?
I'm waiting for them to fix the bugs in the game and release it.
And by that, you mean the bug that
it's
not on. Yeah, Xbox, that's not on PlayStation.
Yeah, and then for them to release the bug-free version on the PlayStation, because we all know the real issue is not Bethesda, is not Starfield, it's the Xbox. So
it's the Xbox, obviously.
100%. Phil Spencer's at fault here. Control F. No,
clearly.
Replace Phil Spencer. I don't know. I think Greg Miller was talking about this game, and he's like, you know, one of, if not the only person that...
He said this is better than Elden Ring, which I don't know, man. I don't know about all that.
Again, he is one of the biggest proponents of this game. He likes it. It's fine.
Yes.
And I'm trying to, like, in my head, like, I think, like, I trust a lot of his video game opinions. Like, I feel like, sure, I understand him as a gamer. Yep. And what he said to me, and this is probably not going to hold true to, like, what you believe of the game, but he said that part of his fun of the game is to sit and listen to dialogue. And there's so much of this game is the conversations and the dialogue aspects of it. And that's what he gets lost in.
Sure.
Which makes sense why I don't like it, because I think it's a little bit slow. That conversation was continuing with them talking about how broken the persuasion system is in the game.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, not he likes the story, but also the persuasion system's busted, which is part of why I like the dialogue in games where you feel like you're actually, like, able to skill check with persuasion and stuff like that. But this game doesn't seem to have a good balance of that kind of stuff yet. I don't know. Yeah. It's one of those games that is very intriguing to me. I still am interested in, like, kind of like finishing it to completion. As complete as I can with the game. But I don't know. It's just still, there's something. I think this game will forever be looked at as it could have been something better than it was. And no matter what they do to the game, it's always going to be the what could have been with the game instead of what it actually is.
Yeah. It's that thing for me where I'm just like, my idea of what Bethesda could do with all the new hardware advances and stuff, because they haven't, is Skyrim the last thing they put out? No, Fallout 4 and 76 and whatever. But like you think about, well, what could they do with all this new stuff? And the answer is like, oh, nothing. No, and I bet Starfield would have blown my fucking mind in 2011, the same way that Skyrim did, right? But like, the fact that there is nothing that is different about it now. Like what their games are feel like is just the most disappointing thing for me.
Well, and I think, too, one of the things about Skyrim, and I'm sure we've talked about this before, one of the things that makes that game fun is, like, you're literally in, like, this sandbox. And, yeah, there's a story that's going on that you could follow if you want. But, like, it really does reward you for going over there.
Yeah.
Going in that cave.
Yeah, you can, because you just see something, like, I know this is like the joke that everyone's like, because Todd Howard kept being like, you can see that mountain, you can walk to it, but you can. And in Starfield, you can't, because like, it's just loading screens and like empty areas. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. It was one of those things. The idea of Starfield was so much cooler in my head than when the game actually booted up. I thought it would be No Man's Sky with a big story and these, like, unlimited places to travel and truly explore and do whatever you want. And I don't think it's quite there yet.
Yes, 100%. So, yeah, I guess we'll talk about Starfield next when it's on PS5 and you play it and platinum it, I imagine. Until Dawn. Got a remaster / remake. Not by Supermassive, who originally developed by the game, but by it's published by Sony Interactive Entertainment, so it's Sony money. But this is done by Ballistic Moon. You mentioned being interested in this. Did you pick it up? By the way, scored a 75 on the PS5 and it unscored on the PC.
I wanted to play it with my wife. I think we still might try to do something. But to be honest, I think that if we're going to sit down and play a game, I think we're probably going to play more Baldur's Gate rather than playing this game that we've already kind of played before. Even if it's interesting, because my wife went back to play it after we played The Quarry, because she wanted to go back get that idea. And from what I'm seeing, it's not like drastically different or better enough to justify it for me.
So I watched the Before You Buy on this game, because there aren't a ton of like video reviews for this, because I wanted to see it. I wanted to see the like the game in motion and see like just how different it looks and whatever else. And it was really interesting because he basically said like, this is unquestionably the same game.
Mm-hmm.
There is not a single difference other than how it looks. And like, there's some animation improvements, like the hair texture looks better. But like, other than that, like other than the simple presentation, there is literally not a single thing that is better or different about this, other than it just looks pretty good. And even then, I've seen a lot of like comparison images where it does not look better. In fact, looks worse.
Mm-hmm.
Cause it also, it takes, there's this problem that people talk about on Twitter a lot. And I think it's overblown to a certain extent, but also like there is some truth to it, where like a lot of these remakes, these remasters end up kind of killing the art design of an original game. You know what I mean? And like, I think the art design for Until Dawn is really strong. The first one, it's got that like icy blue sort of sheen to everything where it doesn't look real, but it looks like stylized, you know, whereas this tries to go for more realistic, like a more realistic look, but it drops that style. So it loses a bit of like the intention behind a lot of stuff, you know? But so Before You Buy basically was just like, there's not much to this. But if you've never played Until Dawn before, this is a great fucking game to play because Until Dawn is really good. He was also saying, I thought this was interesting. He said like, after the casting of Frank Stone, which was the most recent Supermassive game, he's like, I was wondering if maybe Supermassive like had lost the sauce, or maybe they didn't even have it at all. And in replaying this, he says like, it's clear that they had it. Like there is something really good to this. I have to imagine this is in a way to cash in on the movie that they just wrapped filming on for Until Dawn.
I mean, maybe also it's Halloween. So like having another spooky game come out probably makes sense.
Now's the time for it.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, the business model of Sony has been, let's re-release everything again.
Re-release things when they're going to be relevant.
Yeah.
And then just cash it. Like Last of Us Part One with the TV show. What was it like sold like 1200% more than it had ever sold before when that show came out. And same thing, right? Like if you watch the movie and it's really good and you're like, oh my gosh, I want to play the game now. I don't know. Like maybe it's because of people like us who say old games are old, but like, is that enough for someone to look at a game from 2015 that looks as good as Until Dawn does and go like, ugh, no way am I going to play this. In my opinion, I don't think so, but also maybe they do. Maybe there's research to show that there's like a year that they will like cut off and not play. But
yeah. And I think my phrase, we should change the phrase from old games are old to old games are old, but I'm cheap.
But I'm cheap. And it really depends on what we mean by old games being old and like old design. Like I think we can expand on it.
We can have like a paragraph in parentheses underneath it. We need the context, the warning. We'll get a lawyer in here to write something up for us.
Yeah, we'll get that. We'll get that at the end of this episode.
Yeah. With our Patreon money, we can hire a lawyer.
100%. Yeah, I don't know. This one is a little baffling because it really doesn't make much sense in terms of like, this is a game that like needs to be made. I have seen people saying that there is maybe like a cutscene or two that plays at the end if you beat it under certain conditions. I haven't really looked at it yet. That maybe suggests that there's a sequel to Until Dawn coming, which I'll tell you what, if they do a sequel that is of the same quality as Until Dawn, using all those same characters, and it's like, guys, it's been 10 years. Do you know what I mean? Like now I'm back in. Now I'm kind of interested.
It could, but the problem with that is the canon ending then. They've made a canon ending.
100%, right, which kind of undoes.
And I know it's not as good of a game, but I still think a thing like The Quarry, I really appreciated having that. I really enjoyed that experience and playing it again, even though if it wasn't the same type of level of good as I thought Until Dawn was for me.
It's the difference between being like great and good.
Yeah,
I think Until Dawn is great. I think The Quarry is good.
Yeah,
which I'll take, which is much better than the other Supermassive stuff, which has been, in my opinion, shit ass garbage. But so I'll take good over shit ass garbage.
Do you think like Until Dawn, like they can dress it up all they want, but I think going back and playing that game, a lot of the control stuff is the old stuff to me.
Yeah, so they tried to improve some of that. That is like the one major gameplay thing that they did change, where like instead of the fixed camera angles and stuff like that, it's more just like third person adventuring.
But
the problem you run into is like you're in tight hallways.
Yeah.
And like in order to have like realistic movement, you are going to have that like delay in terms of, yeah. You know what I mean? Like it's kind of an imperfect solution, which if you're going to run into that problem, just give it to me like with the fixed camera angles, because then there's like ambiance and mood to it, as opposed to just like walking around picking stuff up and kind of getting the camera caught on the walls and stuff. But
you're trying to like get the and like doing the most awkward little like hand thing with it, trying to get it right.
Do you ever do that in real life? You pick something up and then you like turn it over just to look at it, and you like.
But
turn
you're
it back
trying to get
down.
The right hand, but you just can't like rotate your. It's well, it's like this thing. My grandpa, I was must have been an idiot child. He always used to do this with his hand. He'd go like. And I'd be like, how did you do that, Grandpa? And he's like, I just did.
It's cute. Yeah. It's funny.
He tricked me.
He got you. Got your nose. Justin, Silent Hill 2 remake.
Scored a 75.
I've been saying it the whole time. It scored really well. I knew it was going to score super well. Scored an 87 on the PlayStation 5 and an 86 on the PC. I never doubted it. Bloober Team, you know, always making really good stuff. I am obviously I'm making some jokes here. Obviously, I did not anticipate this to do well. I'm a Bloober Team. I'll say it. I'm a hater. I'm a Bloober Team hater. And so for the fact that this scored so well and has performed so well is a little shocking to me. Justin, what do you think of all of this?
So remember, this kind of goes back to what at the very beginning of this. You don't like Bloober Team, which is great. I don't love them. Yeah. And I know part of the joke is it better than Medium? That's part of the it's part of the joke of our podcast. I mean, totally serious aspect of our podcast.
It's 100%.
One is the most serious thing ever.
Sincerity.
But you can quote me on this. Go back and pull the tape up. But I said Bloober Team taking another game and having the bones for that game and then redoing that with them seems to be the perfect solution, because there are always moments in every Bloober Team game that I love. They have a moment. It's maybe not the full game, but they'll have a sequence, a series, a moment, a scary part. Like even in the Medium, I think all the negatives about that game, one of the strongest things I think is that moment when you're walking in at the very beginning, when you're going through the morgue and it's like you're still kind of like understanding what's happening. It's a little spooky. It's very kind of contained, but then the game just keeps going and you're like, oh, okay, there's a bunker. I got to shoot this girl. What's going on here? But like them being able to not focus on telling a story and just making a story that's already good, excellent, apparently the right play for them. And if anything, this is the way to get me to play Silent Hill 2, because old games are old. Silent Hill 2.
That's an old game.
That's an old game.
And you know, like I'm an apologist for Janken games if it adds to something. I know we've talked a lot about like Resident Evil 4 game controls very poorly. But in my opinion, I'm like, but that's it. That adds to it, you know. But does that mean that I'm right and you're wrong for not liking that? No, of course not. You know what I mean? I will say someone tweeted out at Dream Baum, tweeted out, please fill the form. And it's Silent Hill 2 apology form to Bloober Team from date, reason for behavior. And you know, X out one of the things and says, I repeated a YouTuber's opinion. I just wanted to fit in. I have been brain damaged to feed on negativity. I only saw the Germa Layers of Fear clip, and I will hereby respect Bloober Team's ability to grow and judge Silent Hill 2 on its merit when it comes out. Now, this was being shared around. A lot of people were sort of like laughing along with it because, you know, that is certainly a way for people to feel about it. But Derek Van Dyke, I don't know who this is. He is a voice on Super Deluxe Gamescast, which seems to have some following here, quoted this, and he said this, and I think this sums up my feelings towards Bloober Team and my trepidation towards the remake quite well. He says, crazy thought here, but what if, perhaps, Bloober Team's reputation and criticism was extremely well-earned and substantiated good faith criticism of their work enabled them to reflect and improve? What if we treated art criticism as sometimes necessary for artists to evolve? Basically saying, like, it's good to not have given them the benefit of the doubt because other things that they've made have not been very good. You know, whether or not we talk about the Medium, like, is that something you are a diehard fan of?
of the medium, absolutely not.
Yeah.
Like, I think but, like, I thought the game was fine, but like, it's not like anything that it's like, I would say is a pinnacle of gaming. That's like swimming in sevens. You know what I mean?
100%. Sevens, really?
here we go again. Right,
I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying.
Yeah, no, yeah.
But yeah, you know what I mean? Like this idea of like, I don't owe a Bluebird team an apology. I think all the signs pointed to this being horrific. I'm happy and I'm excited to try it out. I think the review from Digital Trends did a really good job talking about this, basically saying like, is this necessary? No. Is this the definitive way to play this game? Also, no. Is it a good way to play this game if you are interested in trying it out and can't get a copy of the original or are put off by the original's PlayStation 2 ass shit? Yes. You know, and that it seems to I think the subhead was like it understands the assignment. What were you going to say?
I would challenge the part of this, and this is the same thing that I believe with the Resident Evil 4 remake. It's like, yeah. Like I get people will, don't get me wrong. I understand mm-hmm. that Resident Evil 4 is people's favorite game of all time, but in a world where the remake exists, I find it hard to go back for the original. And I know you disagree with that, but I think for this one, even probably more so, I think that when this one exists, this becomes the way to play it.
Yeah, I think what's tough about it is that there is no remastered or there is, but it's like
it's not. Yeah,
no. Although there is a joke about the remastered version. Did you see this?
Mm-mm.
So in the remastered version, the Silent Hill 2 like farm sign is in Comic Sans font. You
know no, it's so stupid.
Like this is one of the things that everyone's like, holy shit! This is like one of the first things you see in the beginning of the game is Comic Sans.
Yeah.
And so in the remake, if you like clip the camera through the wall at the farm in the farmhouse, the Silent Hill 2 Comic Sans font sign is in the farmhouse on the ground. That's funny. That's like they get the joke.
Can I tell you my evolution as a teacher? Speaking of Comic sure. Sans, when I was student teaching, like very formative time for teaching, we were sitting in this presentation and there was these school police officers talking about very serious like active shooter things at the building, sure. right? And my department was talking about how the police officers had their presentation in Comic Sans.
Oh my
gosh.
They're
like, we cannot take them seriously. So for the longest time, Comic Sans, I did not touch it because I'm like, if we're talking about serious stuff, I don't want to have Comic Sans on it. But now I become the teacher that on purpose will make everything Comic Sans because it's just funny to me. And like at this point, high schoolers, they freaking know that Comic Sans is a joke.
I knew I was in the dumb kid math class because all the tests were in Comic Sans.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
that's
yeah,
true.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah. Well, yeah. And also, I was in a class that one whole chapter of the math unit was how to tell what number is bigger. It's not important.
Can I say that Comic Sans mm-hmm. is the Nickelback of fonts?
Nickelback's all right.
I just said I use Comic Sans now.
Okay.
People give right, Comic sure. Sans. Why do people hate Comic Sans, Peter? Tell me. Give me a good reason why they hate it.
It's goofy.
Oh, Ariel's not?
Ariel's like elegant.
Tahoma's not?
I'm more of an Oswald guy.
Okay. Well, like
Oswald's my favorite.
That's just a flavor, right? Like when if I'm sitting there at Baskin and Robbins and I want to choose the like blue one with bubblegum in it and then the person
yeah, no
would
thanks.
Laugh at me when I chose it. That's not cool.
I guess that's you know you're right, and I apologize.
Why can right. I still get Comic Sans on Google Docs? You know
can
what?
You not?
You can.
Oh, I see
can still do it. And then tell me something like this. Times New Roman, everyone's like, Times New Roman. Where is that nowadays? We're not a Times New Roman society. We're an Arial society. So the fact where
yeah,
they
we had
to rewrite the citations. What?
It's because of Google.
Because Google used it. Google?
Google drives default font is Arial, so it's just what everyone uses.
So there you go.
That's fair.
Take that fucking Microsoft Times Roman. You know what, Phil Spencer? Fuck it. Everyone use Comic Sans. Fuck you.
Dude, but no, it's Starfield is Times New Roman, I think.
That makes sense, doesn't it?
But yeah, so Silent Hill 2, I'm interested in playing. I'm going to play this.
Yes.
I wanted to, even if it was terrible, like I needed to see it. But now I need to see it in sort of a new light where it's like, apparently it has the sauce. So
this is the perfect example of what I asked for in a game that I really wasn't interested in, but despite all odds, it's good. This is a game that I'm going to want to play.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
If you're asking, going back to Until Dawn, one of the things in the calculus of wanting to play that game again, why would I put $60 into a game I already own twice or $70 into a brand new game that's good that I've never played before? Brand new.
100%. Right. Yeah, I know what you mean. But it's also one of those things where, like, for me, sometimes if a game reviews well, but I'm still kind of like on the fence about it, it needs to review well with like critics that I respect. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like critics that like resonate with me in terms of the things that they like and stuff like that. Because if this was just I'm not trying to dunk on anyone who works for these sites or anything like that. But like for me, I don't necessarily always trust but I put different stock into something maybe from somewhere like Nintendo Life, because it is a more of enthusiast media as opposed to real like criticism. And that's okay. Those two things are different. And I just, when I'm looking at a game review, I'm not looking to like be excited. I'm looking to like be informed. Does that make sense?
Well, and I mean, you can talk about video game reviews and numbers all you want. I think numbers are important, but once the number gives me part of the story, I want to hear what the words have to say about why that is what it is. So the story is Silent Hill is an 87. Good. It's doing great. Now, why?
Yeah.
You know, 100%. Like that, because I think that's just as important too. Astrobot, that thing's a 90 fucking four, whatever the hell that shitty game is. But like when I read people are
screaming at you. People are screaming at you right now.
Yeah, the medium's better than Astrobot. You heard it here, folks. You agree that the medium's better than Astrobot?
No, I haven't played Astrobot, but I agree of just being like,
oh no. You said it. We heard it. You said you agree with me. So thank you. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. The medium is better than Astrobot, meaning that the medium is the game of the year in PlayStation Land this year.
It has to be, right? For PlayStation fans, Astrobot's got to be it, right?
Probably.
No, it's going to be Stellar Blade for them.
No, I would say, is Silent Hill PlayStation?
It's a PlayStation PC? Exclusive.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that would be
PC
it.
PC too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Perhaps. Yeah, I'm not trying to disparage, like,
oh my God.
Just going off of like what I think people really like.
Do you see that there, how many critic reviews there are of it?
My goodness,
friend.
69.
Whoa.
I don't know if you know this. It's kind of embarrassing. It's like an innuendo.
Like, is it? Because it kind of looks like it's. I like it because if I'm standing on my head, it looks the same as if I'm standing on my feet.
Sure, I like it. Never mind.
I'm sure maybe if I would. Okay, we're good. We got it.
Fill in the blank there with your own funny little joke. Last game in the Metacritic roundup. Metaphor ReFantazio. ReFantazio? Who's to say? Me, because I've played it. But Xbox Series X scored a 92.
Before you say it, what a fucking stupid name for a video game. Unless...
I think they should have just called it Metaphor.
Even that. I mean, I didn't play the game, so what do I know? Like, what the fuck is a persona? But anyway, you go ahead and talk about the reviews.
Well, the personas are what is inside them. It's in what side of all of us. Our personas.
What?
It's a representation of our own self and how we view ourselves.
Well, a metaphor is like a really just a comparison of two unlike things. Could be an extended metaphor. But
I do understand the main character's name is Metaphor ReFantazio. That's not true. I just like,
oh, I'd be like, I mean, I think that makes it worse to be honest. You just name this random character ReFantazio.
So it scored an 82 on the Xbox Series X, a 91 on the PC, and a 94 on the PlayStation 5. Holy shit, this thing scored well. I've put about 25 hours into Metaphor ReFantazio over the past 2 weeks here. I didn't do a review of it. I got it for work reasons, though. This is a pretty good game.
Okay, you said all those numbers, they're really high, and your response is, it's okay.
It's not okay. It's good. It's quite good.
But okay.
In my
after all
opinion,
that, you say it's good.
In my opinion, I was, and again, I'm only 25 hours in. Most other reviewers have like upwards of 50, you know? So there is plenty of room. And this game is like an 80 hour, 100 hour RPG. Like, this is a huge game. this game is good, but I was a little shocked by how well it scored.
Okay.
Not saying it's bad, but for this, like a 94 on Metacritic for me is like, holy fuck, this is unlike anything we've ever seen before. Whereas this to me feels very similar, very well trodden. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. My question to you before I answer that, is there anything about this game that would give you sequel vibes to Persona in terms of more of its gameplay and its style and its stuff like that? Because I know it's a different kind of story, different world.
So we're going to be talking about this in the bonus episode. We're going to talk a lot about like video game comparisons. Yeah, this is, if you are looking for Persona 6, this is that, guys. Like this is Persona. I'm not like, I know people get so like, oh no, it's Metaphor, it's a whole different thing. Fuck you. I've played 25 hours of this. This is Persona. It's Persona, guys. It's all of the systems from Persona minus a few with different ones in place. And by that, I'm talking explicitly about the combat and nothing else. This is Persona except in medieval times with fantasy creatures.
So with that being the knowledge and that being my assumption, does that make more sense why it's scoring so well?
100%.
Yeah.
Persona is excellent. I love Persona.
Yeah.
But a lot of the reasons a lot of the things I really like about Persona are not present here. And that's where I start to go like, oh,
interesting.
That's okay.
Okay. Cool.
So for example, Persona, I'm talking about Persona 3 and 5. Persona 3 Reload. I played some Persona 3, portable, and I played a decent amount of Persona 4. And
don't forget Tactica. You played that game too.
And I did play Tactica and I did play Strikers.
Yes.
I know we're kidding. Those games are actually included in what I'm talking about.
You've been Persona'd. Yes.
Anything coming after Persona 5 has a much, much clearer emphasis on vibes and style, right? Like the menus and stuff like that. And the style is definitely there in Persona 3 and 4. In 3 and 4, right? But, like, since they did Persona 5, it has been, like, vibe city of, like, they are establishing this tone using these, like, using the visuals and using the soundtrack, right? It's immaculate. It is 100% my shit. And then they took the entire soundtrack from Persona 3 and just, like, injected the same vibes into that for a Reload. Still 100% my shit. But it's got like a different twist to it. In fact, I prefer a lot of the music and stuff like that in Persona 3 Reload than I do Persona 5 and Persona 5 Royal. This replaces the kind of like lo-fi, kind of like just like moody synthesizer vibe with like orchestral singing and like soundtrack stuff. It is undeniably excellent. I am not humming it to myself when I'm walking around doing my daily stuff. You know, it is undeniably excellent music. It's a great soundtrack, but it's not the type of music that, like, in my opinion, it's just exactly what I would imagine the music would be for a fantasy game like this.
Does that
make sense?
Can I try to put words to what you're saying?
Please do.
You listen to Persona 5 music on your Spotify playlist. You
do
not listen to Metaphor music on your Spotify playlist.
Correct.
Is that kind 100%. Of is that kind of the vibe? Not that it's bad music. It's just not,
it's not bad.
Your music.
It's just, yeah, it just
not
it's a different
your music.
Vibe.
Yeah, it's not your vibe to listen to music like that.
Yeah.
Okay, so
it's good. It's good. Metaphor is great. It's very good. But like the vibe is so different and it's just not the vibe that really resonates with me 100%.
I'm really interested in you playing the game, me watching you kind of play the game a little bit, because I think that's going to be one of the things that's going to come down for me playing this game or not, ultimately, is that kind of not only you playing it, but you kind of talking through some of these differences, because I think that's important to me. But before we go too far into talking about if I'm going to play it or not, can you explain to me what the game is about?
Okay, buckle up. it's a little complicated.
All right.
Where to start? Okay, so this is in a fantasy world.
A re-fantasio world?
a metaphorical world. Yes. Okay. Let me just hit you with some like setting things. So in this world, there are 8 major tribes of sentient beings that are like all different races. And so you have like people who have like ram horns and stuff like that. They're called like the Paprius or something like that. There's a fucking lot of them, of the 8 main tribes. So you got the people who have like these like little ram horns. And so they are politically the most powerful. They're, most of them are in seats of power. Like they are like the most populous group. Then you have a secondary, also similarly popular group. They're called the Rotisans or something like that. They are the people you see with these big long ears that are like very like elf ears. There are 8 of these tribes and they all have different beef with each other and they all have different characteristics and they all have like different prejudices against each other. Which, by the way, similar to Final Fantasy 16, at any point in this game, you can click a button and it will pull up sort of like the encyclopedia. So you can like look at all the different things and like be able to reread all the things about like what's going on and what kind of tribe people are from. And it gives you like context of stuff. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes.
So there's the 8 major tribes, but there are more than 8 different races of people. The 8 major tribes are just the 8 biggest one, the most popular one. You are an Elda. And now this is where I get a little confused. In the entry for the Elda, it says that you do not, like, the Elda do not have any distinguishable traits. Because, like, the main character has, like, heterochromia, where one eye color is different than the other. And so I was like, oh, that must be an Elda trait. But no, it says there's no distinguishable traits by the Elda. So a lot of them are viewed as inferior because, like, well, they don't have, like, really big ears or they don't have wings or stuff like that. But the thing is, like, at a glance, my guy doesn't look that different than other people. Like, some people have horns, but the horns are really small. You know what I mean? Yeah. But as you're running around the city, you have all these people, like, shouting, like, discrimination stuff at you. But, like, oh, this fucking Elda and whatever. And you're like, I don't even, like, how do you know? I don't look that different from you guys. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
So what this game is about, is like the setting. There is political unrest in the capital city of this world. The king is sickly and old, and the young prince is believed to have been killed, like, 5 years ago or something like that.
Bet he is alive.
In reality, he is alive, and you are one of his good friends.
Oh.
He has a curse put on him, though, and in order to break the curse, you got to kill the guy who put the curse on him. The guy's name is Luis. These are all things that are revealed in like the first like 2 hours. These are not spoilers. Luis kills the old decrepit king in a play to become the king. And then the king actually cast a spell. So upon his death, he gets transformed into the moon, and the moon has a big face on it, like in Majora's Mask. And basically, the spell is such that no one can just become the king based on lineage, based on political sort of like maneuvering. In fact, the new king is going to be decided by popular opinion. So not by vote necessarily, but basically like you have to win the hearts of the population in order to become the new king. And so it is your job to rise through the ranks of all of the kingly candidates and become the new king. Does that make sense?
Yes.
It is significantly more complicated than that.
Yeah. So just,
but
okay. All of that you said takes place in the first couple hours of the game.
Yes, that is the premise for the game. Some of those details get revealed as you go, but yes.
All right. When is God involved?
Well, I guess that's the question. Is the king God? Like, he seems like he's a god.
Yeah.
You also, so you,
cause you also said that the 8 deities, right? Or the 8, gods that are for each of the races.
Oh, there's not gods for them. Well, okay. So there's like religions that like kind of like, they have different like religions and stuff they study. There's like a lot of like political, like religious, like interlocking stuff where like the religion has people who are high in the like council of like the main city who are all are like, well, we want to make a play for the throne, for the religion. The religious people are oftentimes like zealots though. And they are like, are super racist to like the other kingdoms and stuff like that. There's a lot of shit. And then so on top of all of this, you have this book, and the book basically depicts a utopia that looks a lot like our world, but obviously, like, there are some things about it that are not like our world, because our world is flawed and there's, you know, suffering and sadness and corruption and all that sort of stuff, where basically you read this book, and as you read it and share it with people, the people you share it with awaken to the powers that you have. You, in your mind, it's called academia. You basically, like, go into your mind. It's the Velvet Room from Persona. The author of the book is trapped in there, and he's the one who gives you the new powers and helps you awaken to new combat abilities.
Like the Igor?
Yes.
Okay.
His name's Mor, this new guy.
Oh, Morgor.
Yeah, give me more of these powers.
Yeah, Mor. Okay, good. I get you.
So I'm in the second, I'm 25 hours in, I'm in the second, like, dungeon palace kind of thing. It still follows that same calendar system that's in the Persona series. Were we talking about this? Like, was this just like 2 minutes ago, or was this before we started recording? Like, the problem for me is also that, like, the calendar system makes a lot of sense for Persona 5 and for, like, all the Persona games, because they're set in a school. And so, like, your day to day activities, like, having a focus on what you're doing after school makes a lot of sense because you are in the life of a student. Whereas this, like, it kind of makes a little bit less sense because it's just like, we all have time, right? Like, we all experience time. So sure, make a calendar system for any game, but it's this sort of thing where I'm like, I don't really understand why. And because there isn't this, like, incredible connection to that within the setting, it is a little, like, it's just a little disconnected and it's not that it doesn't work, but it doesn't, like, mesh the same way that, like, when you play Persona, you're like, oh, of course they pay attention to the dates and stuff because they have tests that they have to keep track of and, like, summer vacation that they got to think about. Whereas this, it's just like, okay, we have a week to do this. You know what I'm saying? Like, the connection there is just a little bit weaker. Does that make sense?
So it's kind of like that idea that they're trying to copy paste sounds probably a little bit more simple than it is. They're trying to take the influence from Persona, but in the world they created, it doesn't fit in the same way. But
yes,
10 yards back,
not bad.
It's the same mechanics as Persona.
Yes. And it's the sort of thing where, like, I understand, we're going to talk about this a little bit more in the bonus episode. I understand to some extent why people, like, play, like, Shin Megami Tensei 5 or, like, any of the SMT games and are like, stop comparing this to Persona. It's so different than Persona. Because, like, it's not Persona. Persona has that relationship system. It has that calendar system and all that. Yes, you are, like, recruiting the same demons and stuff like that, and you are using the same, like, abilities. Like, you're always going to be using Rakunda or whatever it's called to buff your enemy, your friends and whatever. But, like, it's not... I see why you could say, like, oh, well, SMT and Persona are totally different. Oh, Soul Hackers and Persona, totally different. This is the same thing in terms of, like, what it's actually asking of you. The combat is different. The Persona stuff, like the powers you get are different. Instead of you having the ability to just change out personas and whatever, and, like, your allies have one fixed, like, character and abilities, you are able to switch them out for anything, which is a little bit closer to the SMT stuff. It's like, for example, I encountered a really, really tough boss in a dungeon, but I didn't want to turn back because I was going to waste a day. And the dates are a lot tighter in this, and as opposed to, like, in Persona 5, it's like, we have 25 days to get this done. And it's like, holy shit, that's more time than God has ever given anyone to do anything. Whereas this, it's like, okay, we got 7 days. So, like, the turnaround is a lot quicker. So I was like, okay, I don't want to waste this day. So what I did is I took a look at the enemy and sort of, like, what sort of damage they dealt. And I just spec'd everyone out in the same kit so that they all resisted the type of damage that it deals, and that we could just dunk on this one enemy. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I basically, like, hyper-focused the crew on being this one thing so that we could kill this one specific guy, and then went back to the preferences I wanted. It was kind of cool. It made me feel smart in a way that Persona can't, because it's like, well, it's just whoever's in your party. But...
Okay, couple questions to go through what you just said that were kind of interesting to me. Yeah. First, let's go to the day system, how they're kind of tighter windows. Is that because there's less to do in between, or less things to spend your energy on, or is it because it's more streamlined?
I think it's a little bit of all of that.
Okay.
It's tough because I remember, so Persona 5 had the most to do. Mm. Royal, really, had the most to do. And then Persona 3, I was surprised that they just sort of stuck with all of the things that were in the original Persona 3 and didn't add a whole lot. And so to the point where at the end of Persona 3 Reload, you can have literally nothing to do at night. Like once all your social stats are maxed out, there's only, I think, two or three of the like relationships that happen at night. So once you max those out in the evening, there's nothing to do. So you just go to sleep. So like I was surprised because there was just less to do. There is even less to do in this. But again, you don't really feel that because it means that you like the choices you're making about what you're doing are a little bit more important because there's less to do and because you have less time. Does that make sense? It's not bad necessarily.
Just
because it also means that the relationships you have with the characters are like they move quicker. You spend more time with them. And like that's the main focus as opposed to like, are we going golfing today? You know what I mean?
Yeah. How does the party system work in terms of like how many people are with you and when you can change them out and that kind of thing?
So I will say this, and this is like how all the Persona games are, like all Atlas games are. It's fucking slow to start. It takes a long time to really get going. I have just 25 hours in. I have just gotten my fourth party member who is you can have four in your team at once. So I've not swapped anyone out. In terms of like they're like being on the team or not, I can tell you can always sort of tell when there's a character who's going to eventually become in your party because they have the character portrait and a sword and you're like, well, you're eventually going to join me. But like I've not had the option to swap people out, but you do, like I said, swap out they're called archetypes. So you do swap those out as they level up. And every single time you make a new bond with someone, you unlock a new archetype, which is kind of cool.
So
because it means, yeah, go ahead.
That's like mage, sword master, magic seeker, that kind of thing. Those are the archetypes. Okay, got it.
I will say the combat is a lot more interesting than Persona because there are two major differences. The first is the positioning. So basically you can either be in the front row or back row. You can switch front or back as many times as you want in a single turn. But you want to be really careful about your positioning because if you're in the front row, it means you deal more melee damage for any melee skills or just like basic attacks. But it also means you take more damage when you get hit. If you're in the back row, you deal significantly less melee damage and any sort of like direct attacks, but you take way less, your defense rises significantly. So if you're like a healer or like a spellcaster, you stick in the back row, and you are going to have, you're going to be like the backup, you know what I mean? Whereas in the front row, like you're going to be taking more of the damage and stuff like that. I think that's kind of interesting. And it makes you like have to really reconsider what you're doing. The second thing about the combat that's really interesting is that the way the turn system works. So basically every single time you start a turn, you get the number of turns as people in your party. So when you first start, it's like two. And then now I'm at four because I've got four people in my party. You can extend the amount of turns you have because turns are broken into whole turns and half turns. If you hit an enemy's weakness, that only counts as half a turn. So let's say my first guy, so I've got four turns total. My first guy goes and he hits the enemy's weakness. I have now three and a half turns, but that half turn gets sent to the next person in line. So I basically have actually given myself an additional turn. If like, does that make sense?
Yeah. Can you and get so a half some of actions, a half of a turn?
No.
Okay.
So when they are using that secondary half turn, okay, now they either have to do something that is going to give another half turn because then that doesn't waste either of those turns. It just makes the next turn be in half. So now you've got two full turns, two half turns, which really is four actions. Or if you are receiving a half turn, you can, like I said, either exploit a weakness or do something that is going to create a new half turn. Or you just have to use it. You just have to burn it. Because another thing that can create a half turn that will burn a half turn, though, is skipping your turn. So if you have a character who can only like do one sort of damage and that one sort of damage is either like repelled or weak against that specific enemy, it's not a bad idea to skip that person's turn so that you can go back around in the turn order again and have a character who will do heavy damage onto that enemy go again. Does that make sense?
Sort of. When you say the turns before the opponent attacks, right?
Correct.
Okay, so it's not like you have to beat it in like four turns, the battles. You're like slow, you got your four people, but you can also have those four people go multiple times if you're using enough half turns that you can go back in the order.
If you are exploiting enemy weaknesses and doing the right sorts of things, yes, you can go, essentially you can go eight times in a row if you are smart about it. That said, it goes the other way too. And if you're not careful, enemies will be able to stack stuff on top of you. So like, that's where you got to be careful. So it's just, it's interesting because it means that you're really thinking about exploiting like enemy weaknesses and using like, status effects. So like if you put an enemy to sleep and then you hit them with a physical move, that's a critical attack. You want to set that up as often as possible with a critical attacker, with just a regular attacker, because it means that you're going to get to go more and deal out, dish out more damage. Does that make sense?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
It's a cool system that I like.
Okay, so the other thing that you were talking about was the, like, the fewer time between days that you have or whatever. Do you still have as many opportunities for social interactions with your party members to have like kind of like deep relationships and stuff like that? And granted, I know you only have a few characters as of now, but.
Yeah, because you end up also, so you get this, like, this is in the trailers. This is a ways in, but like you end up, in order to travel the world, you get on this like giant, like chicken walker ship. It's basically like a huge spaceship, but it's on two legs, and everyone who's like a big name in the competition has one. And so when you are traveling between places, it will take several days to get from major cities. So while you have that time, like that downtime, like traveling different places or like going to side quests, oftentimes the place that you're trying to go to is one day away from where you are. So you have to spend a day to get there. And if you're going to spend the day on the ship, it means that you are going to talk, you like you have opportunities to like grow some skills, do some cooking, or opportunities to spend with your party.
Okay.
And so that works really well, in my opinion.
You said you did, you're in your second dungeon, correct?
Yes.
What is the dungeon design like? Are they unique? Are they interesting? Are they simplistic in nature?
So far they're interesting. I mean, they're just like, fantasy settings, you know what I mean? It's like dungeons and things like that. Like the first one is like a cathedral sort of thing. It's cool. It's interesting. The design is as good as the palaces in Persona 5. It's not randomly generated like Persona 3 or 4. It's good. It is interesting. The themes are all cool. Like the music is good. They're not as distinct as something like Persona 5 or as like Tartarus was, in my opinion, because like it's just so far a cathedral, a dungeon, a giant cave system. You know what I mean? Like it's cool, but it's not something that's like really truly memorable or like, I'm not trying to just like compare Persona 5, but like I think about like Persona 5 and like the dungeons in that game are all based around characters who are like really important that we've spent a lot of time like getting to know. And by exploring those places, those villains, we learn a lot about who they are. This one, like the first one you go to is just like a bad guy who loves being evil. You know what I mean? He's just like a bad guy. He's like a necromancer and you show up and you say, hey, stop doing necromancy. And he goes, ha ha, no. And then you fucking kill him. You know, like you just punch him to death, basically. And so like there wasn't like any like learning about the character. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The second one is a little bit more of a mystery about like what's going on here and like how did this all happen? So like we're learning a little bit, but again, not like
it's not as like ingrained with the persona of whoever it is that you're in.
Yeah, because you're not learning anything about them. You know what I mean? So like Kamoshida, the teacher from the first one, is like an interesting character because we like learn a lot about him and like there's like a lot of like nuance and depth to him. I mean, he's a piece of shit, but like. Like you learn a lot about him, whereas the bad guy is like the first guy's bad guy's name is like Zombra or something like that.
Good.
And like I just know he's a necromancer who loves, he's a half breed, which is a whole thing. So he's like kind of like an ostracized member of society, but like he's just a necromancer who loves being evil.
Yeah.
You know, I will say this about the dungeon design. They talked about this up a lot in like the preview coverage and stuff like that. And a lot of the reviews even mentioned this. And this is the one thing that I'm really going to push back on in terms of like everyone is like, entitled to their own opinion, of course. And so like me not like falling in love with this game doesn't mean anything about how other people feel about it. You know, it's going to resonate differently with other people. But a lot of people were saying like, oh, this is an incredible blend of like real-time action RPG and like turn-based action RPG. And guys, that's a lie. It's simply false. You have two options. You can either fight enemies in turn-based combat, which is what you're going to do for the majority of the time, or if you're going up against enemies that are below your level or I think equal to your level, you can just attack them in the open world and they just die. There are like sometimes they can attack you back, and so you have to like be careful and like dodge out of the way, but like there is no, it's not like a Musou game. It's not like adding any sort of like new abilities. You cannot perform any abilities outside of combat that isn't just the regular basic attack. It feels like the attacking that you do in Persona 3, where it's just you swing your sword one time, and if you hit them, you hit them. If you don't, you miss, and you got to dodge out of the way and try and hit them again. Does it make sense? Like
I don't want to be that person making a comparison here, but like Pokemon Scarlet and Violet.
Yeah, it's that.
Yeah.
Where like it doesn't add anything. It's not some new deep mechanic. I do think it does. I mean, it streamlines, so I don't have to like fight trash mobs all the time, and like I do appreciate that. And it's a really great way if you want to like grind some of those low level archetypes, just to, like, get some moves, because you can also like transfer moves between archetypes so that you can like if you've got a physical attacking one but you need like a fire move based on an enemy that's common in the area, like you can like learn that. So like if you want to grind out some archetypes, yeah, just equip them and go find some of these trash mobs. But like this is not an interesting new mechanic that's been created here. It's just sort of like a good way to get around having to deal with like fights that are like significantly beneath you.
Man, the more you explain this, the more I just am affirmed in my belief that you should play Fire Emblem Three Houses.
I know. I'm going to keep playing. I like it. I do like it. I'm not trying to sound negative on it. I just was really surprised by at like 10 out of 10. You know what I mean?
So you know me, I think instead of, is it better than medium, right? Instead of it's better than medium, do you think I would like this game?
Yeah.
Do you think I would like this game more so than I did with Persona 5?
What didn't you like about Persona 5? Because I'll say this about this. I saw some people saying like, oh my gosh, this is Atlas's Elden Ring. It's not. This is Atlas's Final Fantasy 16. I mean that in a complimentary way.
Yeah.
In that the story of Final Fantasy 16 is so Game of Thrones inspired. It's like political intrigue and like it's very mature. You know what I mean? Like in a way that like is not like feigning maturity. It's not like mature because people say fuck now. It's like mature because like it tells a mature story. This is the same thing with that. This is a mature story that is like political intrigue and like political drama stuff that is a lot more close to like something like Game of Thrones than anything else. So yeah, what didn't you like about Persona 5?
Two things. First thing is I knew Royal was out.
Fair.
So I guess three things technically. So that second thing, the fact that the time system made me feel like I had to optimize every day to a point where it was too much like homework.
Yeah.
I, from what you were saying, I do not feel like this is like that.
No, it's not.
So
there, you still have the like the social skills that you try to do. However, it's a lot easier to gain social skills. So what you can do is you can go find, like, there's all sorts of people that you can talk to just like pass the time with, and you gain social skills. But when you turn in quests, you will oftentimes get social skills, or when you spend time with your, with like the people who you are like have bonds with, you will frequently gain social skills as well.
This hurt me with both Persona 4 Royal, not Persona 4 and Persona 5. The story is a little slow in terms of how the text is delivered to you, in terms of them talking back and forth. And would you say this game is also like that?
This, I don't remember what it's like to play Persona 5 for the first time. It's been too long. Although I guess I could go back and listen, because I definitely, when we were doing this podcast.
Yeah.
I don't remember being like, holy fuck, there's so much reading in this, in the way that I am like that with this.
Oh, fuck, that's not good.
There is a lot of reading it. Now, something that I ended up picking up as time went on with Persona 5 is the stuff that's cool to skip. Do you know what I mean? Like in Persona 5, every single time there's like a scene transition, you get like an establishing shot of where you are, and then you get like crowd bustle about people talking about the events of the story. I don't need to read that shit. I know what's going on in the story. I'm following the story. I don't need to, you know what I mean? Like, I get that Persona 5 was about like popular perception, whatever. It's like I knew to skip that eventually. I'm sure there is stuff in this that I'm like, okay, when they get back after going to a dungeon and they sit down at the tavern and they just talk about the stuff they're doing, we can probably just skip that. But right now it is one of those things where it's like, oh fuck, there's so much reading in this. Oh shit, there's so much reading.
Are there more or less cutscenes in this game than there are in Persona 5?
When you talk about cutscenes, are you talking about the animated ones? Are you talking about like the anime ones? Like, what do you mean?
Ones that aren't just characters sitting with dialogue boxes.
There's more of that.
Okay.
More. Yeah, there are more cutscenes in this.
Okay, I think
not like a
drastic like
the majority of the game is
just
going to
text
be
text boxes.
A lot of it's voiced, like most of it's voiced, but like, There's good action in this.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. That I think scares me more so than most of the other things.
We were talking about Game of Thrones at the top of this episode. I know you're a big Game of Thrones guy. I know you're deep into House of the Dragon. I don't even know if that's still going on. But like, I've never watched Game of Thrones. Everything I know about Game of Thrones, I look at this and I'm like, if you are a fan of Game of Thrones, this is your thing.
So I guess it's not so much the content, it's the visual novel aspect of it. When Final Fantasy 16, playing through that game, it felt like I was watching a TV series.
Yeah.
Does this feel like a TV series or that you're just reading a visual novel? Okay.
I would not say that this feels like a TV series.
That's a red flag, but
it feels like a comic book.
Well, yeah.
Like a manga, you know what I mean?
More so than Persona 5.
I would say yes, because like this isn't a knock against Persona 5. More happens in this. Like Persona 5 is so much like we're chilling at school, we're chilling at Cafe LeBlanc. Like those are the two places we are. Like the whole game is like only at school, only at home. Sometimes you're outside. This is like globetrotting. Like I think this is your speed.
Yeah, it's
in terms of like what the story is.
90% of it seems like it's more my speed than what Persona is. So I don't know. I'm interested in playing this. I think my problem, as I said before, is that the next few weeks are ridiculous in terms of big bitey games that are coming out.
Is Metaphor on Game Pass?
It doesn't matter. I don't have a portal for it.
I guess that's true. It is not on Game Pass.
But is it on PlayStation?
No, for sure not. Oh, but it's been getting a lot of like Xbox marketing, so I figured it might be. It is not.
Oh no! But it's on PlayStation.
Oh yes, yeah. I
was like, what? Well, it's got two more points higher than Xbox. That's because Phil Spencer's a fucking loser.
I'll say it runs well, but sometimes it makes my like I've been playing with headphones on a lot, and sometimes it'll be like. And I'm like, what does that sound like? Oh, that's my PS5.
Well, good thing I'll be playing in an opposite room. I'll probably be able to hear that still.
I guess that's fair. Yeah. It's good. It's good. I like it.
I'm intrigued.
I am a little disappointed because I thought I was like going to be head over heels for it.
Yeah. And
I really like it, but
I hate, this is my, 34-year-old self saying this. The fact that it's 80 to 100 hours is a serious deterrent.
Yeah, I mean, was that a big deterrent for Final Fantasy, or was that sort of swayed by the fact that you love that first one?
Swayed by the fact that I love the first one.
Gotcha.
It's long, too, but
this is just how I feel about Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, which we've talked about, right? Game I like, I would recommend it. I don't feel like Metaphor has wasted my time at all, whereas Final Fantasy VII Rebirth... certainly wastes your time, and you just have to know that it's being wasted and just move on. This has not wasted my time. There's been a lot of reading. There's been a lot of talking. I'll say this. The characters are good. There's time for them to get better. So far, some of them are a little basic.
Well,
the one guy that I really like, Stroll, he's like the main guy that you meet right at the beginning. Like, he's kind of one dimensional because he's just like a good guy. And I'm like, that's great. I like a good guy. But like, I look back at all of the, like the first friend characters that you meet in Persona stuff or like Atlas stuff. And it's always like a good guy, but this, you know what I mean? And like, there's like more to it. And like, he has like a tragic backstory, but like, yeah, I don't know.
Didn't you like Persona 3 Reload more after playing it for a significant amount of time?
Yeah.
So
this could be there.
Yeah.
So far, I would say that I like Persona 3 Reload more than this.
Okay.
I've got time. I really liked Persona 3 Reload. I could certainly really like this is not bad. Not bad at all. But that's sort of where I fall with it.
Cool. I am still intrigued, and you do not scare me off of it.
You know what might scare you off? The news! Ooh. Oh, shit, we didn't talk about Zelda. what do you think? You want to talk about Zelda in our bonus episode?
Yeah, we could. We could. I mean, I think comparisons are pretty interesting, too, because I got a ton of, like, comparisons based on what we talked about here, because mm-hmm. I literally feel like my understanding of this game is solely made through comparisons.
Let's get through the rest of this, and we'll see how we feel about all that when we get there. And who knows? Maybe we talk about comparisons for 10 minutes in the bonus episode, and then we're like, move on. Let's talk about Zelda.
Zelda's forever, man. I got so much to say about Zelda.
I got plenty to say, and I'm curious about what you have to say about it. So let's save that for the bonus episode.
Yeah, okay.
Maybe do a doubleheader there.
Okay.
Because believe it or not, I bet there's going to be some comparisons within the Zelda conversation.
No.
3 for 3, though. 3 for 3 Industries. The studio behind Halo 4, 5, and 6, or Halo Infinite, rather, has rebranded. Let me just read you this from HaloWaypoint.com, the sort of Halo place for all things Halo. Titled A New Dawn by 343 Industries. Prior to the climactic conclusion of the 2024 Halo World Championship, we offered a glimpse of the future of Halo as the franchise and studio turns a page to begin a new chapter. We are Halo Studios, and a new dawn is breaking as the future of Halo is being built with Unreal Engine 5. Join members of the Halo Studios team to learn more in this behind-the-scenes video. Basically, the video just says, hey, we are rebranding from 343 Industries to Halo Studios. Kind of just a, you know, changes in the people who are here means that we just feel that we are a different studio than when 343 Industries opened in, I think, 2012 or 2013, maybe. And they showcased what Halo is going to look like in Unreal Engine 5. There's some juicy JPEGs here, some crisp 4K visuals of some of these Forerunner structures in with some trees and some snow and a desert and then like a flood sort of place. And then we got this image of Master Chief fighting an elite, and it looks very reflective, looks very Unreal Engine 5. Justin, what do you think of all this?
I feel like this reeks of this forced separation between old and new. And what I mean by that is when you get new people involved in a studio sometimes or involved in any place, so this is not just a video game thing, one of the first things they want to do is make their imprint on that studio and to sunset the past and move on to the future. Correct me if I'm wrong. The history of 343 and Halo is not great.
I would not say that it has been incredibly successful. No.
So the connection about Halo and 343 Studios is not necessarily a positive correlation. So
no,
you get people in here and like, all right, how do we fix this? Well, it's Halo Studios, not 343. What do they work on at 343? Halo. They are now the Halo team. This is the best way to brand this, the best way to market this. I feel like this just feels like semantics to try to create a separation between the past and the present.
Yeah, I would say so. I would say like they've struggled so much to just like find an identity for Halo in the modern era of gaming, which, you know, I'm not a game developer, so I can't really speak to what they have tried, what they haven't tried. I think it would be very simple to make something that people would like.
Yep.
I would start by just making something. I saw someone say this, and I was like, I can't believe Phil Spencer is having issues. If I were in charge of Microsoft Xbox, every 2 years I would have a new 5 to 7 hour Halo campaign. I was like, yeah, that sounds pretty good. Just, you know, use, I'm not saying it's easy, but I'm saying like, it doesn't need to be bigger. It doesn't need to be better. It doesn't need to be all of these things. Like you see like Halo ODST or Halo Reach, and like those are stories set in the Halo universe. They're not bigger and better than any other Halo game, but they are interesting, and they do like, you know, make that world a little bit more deep and stuff like that. And that's cool. So like, why not just do more of that as opposed to like having to say like, we're searching for what Halo means now. And it's like, just make him shoot fucking aliens. You know?
I do think they're kind of in a lose-lose situation. I feel like the game that people want from Halo, or the expected game that Halo would come out with, or Halo Studios comes out with, would have to be like groundbreaking in order for people to love it. If they release a 4-hour Halo campaign, I would assume it would be swimming in sevens.
I guess it really depends. Like, how, like, can you make a tight package? You know what I mean? Like how good of a campaign can you make? Because, like, if you made, I think, another, like, Halo Reach that had some really solid characters, some really solid levels, a little bit of innovation in terms of what the game does, and then make that, you know, have a new update for the multiplayer every 2 years with it, I think that's enough to get people interested and to say, we're doing this again, 2 years, mark your calendars. I think that gives people time enough to play the game, play some of the multiplayer, and say, you know what, I'll be back in 2 years once we've got a little bit of a refresh.
I would have, I mean, maybe, but you know what, that sounds awfully like...
I'm not an executive, well, so
no.
Knows,
I mean, but that sounds awfully like towing the line of a for-service model, and I know what you're suggesting is not a live service model, but what that does suggest is that they are maintaining a multiplayer service while also creating new single-player content, and I don't think the team would be capable of maintaining those two things. They could barely maintain the Halo Infinite multiplayer. And I think really when people think about Halo, when I think of why Halo became Halo, it is really because of your couch co-op, your LAN parties, your multiplayer experience. Yes, there was a good story there, but what gave that legs is the multiplayer. Halo Reach, it's not just the story of Halo Reach. I think people agree that that was a good story for Halo, but it was the multiplayer that came along with Halo Reach that gave it enough legs for people to keep playing. So, like, I think, like, the hurdle to make Halo relevant again is more so than just telling a good story, is more so than just creating a good multiplayer. It is like kind of creating this unattainable thing that people want, because people have such expectations about what Halo is and what it should be, that no matter what is going to be released by Halo Studios, 343, even fucking Bungie right now, I don't think would be able to nail what Halo is. I think that would be an impossible task. And I hate to say it, but I think Halo has become one of those franchises that is never going to be a pinnacle of franchise again, knowing specifically how Microsoft has been dealing with things.
Yeah, I agree. And I do know what you mean with the multiplayer stuff. I would say that, like, a big problem for, I guess, Halo Studios now is the fact that they were running two live service multiplayer games at once, Halo Infinite and Halo Master Chief Collection. Which Master Chief Collection is where the majority of Halo fans are, actually, not in Halo Infinite, you know? So, like, the fact that they were sort of, like, doing those two things could, like, at the same time is, I think, did them a disservice. I do agree, though, about, like, I don't know what they do and how to make this into a series that is serious in our current year, because I think they missed the boat. I think Halo Infinite was the chance, was the opportunity. And I think it almost could have been, like, you look at, like, okay, how do we update Halo for a modern era? It's not like Call of Duty where it's about cover shooting and, you know, aiming down sights and all that. It's a much different feel. It's a power armor game, right? It's not an arena shooter. It's not a military shooter, right? Like, so what do we do? And I think they almost got it with that grapple hook. You know, was saying, like, okay, let's give them powers. Let's do powers, you know. But the problem I think that they faced was they were too stuck in a lot of the, like, Halo tradition stuff. So, like, okay, he has to be fighting the same enemies he's always been fighting. Okay, well, they are not absolutely in any way made to fight against a guy who has an incredible godlike grappling hook. So it's fun to do that grappling hook stuff. But at a certain point, you're like, okay, I've absolutely mastered decimating groups of the same four enemies. Is that all this game is? And the answer is yes, you know.
And on top of that, multiplayer games, like traditional arena shooters, like what I would say Halo used to be, those things just don't have the attention span the same way anymore, because you have these things that are like these nonstop sandboxes of creativity and upgrades and stuff like that Halo doesn't have. Yeah, I can put a fucking bunny ear helmet on my Master Chief if I unlock it or have the right battle pass for it, but, like, that's different than being fucking Goku in Fortnite. You know what 100%. I mean, like, it just doesn't yes. have the same kind of draw to make people keep coming back and playing the same basic map or the same basic content over and over again.
And I think that Halo is in that problem of, like, it wants to be two things. It wants to try and reinvent itself with the grappling hook and with all the new changes to the single player. But then it's also like, okay, well, we have to deliver the same classic Halo experience that we've been doing for years and years and years. And it's not working because those are two different experiences, you know? And so, like, what do we do? I don't know. I guess what they do is they rebranded Halo Studios and make it UE5.
Yeah. I think one of the things that I think I was unfair with is how I said it's never going to be relevant again. I think God of War is kind of like the blueprint for something. How God of War, if they remade God of War 1-3 or whatever the hell it is, if they just made that game again in 2024 with good graphics and new gameplay, that would not have been the success story that God of War 2016 or 2018.
Yep.
2018 and God of War Ragnarok are, because that, like, created such a fresh breath of air and life into the God of War series. That was a significant change. Even though there's still the same similarities there, they did not lean on the old systems and iterate on it. They created a whole new system and then made references and connections that made you feel satisfied with that old stuff while also enjoying the new stuff.
100%. That's the way to go, right?
Yeah.
You just say, fuck what we used to do. We have a new way that this game plays. We have a new feeling for all of this. Let's give Master Chief a kid. Young boy. Little faux hawk.
Take off his helmet.
Yeah, sure. And who's underneath? Paul Schreiber. Pablo Schreiber. There was no one. I mean, you're going to have Xbox fans kill themselves live on Twitch. But, like, who cares? Fuck those guys. You know what I'm saying? Like you have... like David Jaffe talking about how, oh, they ruined Kratos because he was such a masculine dude and now he's crying all the time or whatever. Fuck him. Who cares? They told a great story. Who cares what these people think? You know what I mean? Because I think something as, like, you know what God of War 2018 and then God of War Ragnarok had? Confidence.
Mm.
It said, we're doing something new and we're going to do it really, really well. And they did. And, you know, I'm sure there were people who were disappointed that God of War coming back and it's not the same 3D beat 'em up, kind of not beat 'em up, but, you know, like that same, like, 3D style, that now it's like that more cinematic third person thing. I bet there were people who were upset about it. But you look at the story they told, you look at how they told it, and I think most people are really satisfied with that. You do the same thing for Halo. Yes, you're going to have people mad. Of course you're going to have people mad. But people are always going to be mad. So just do something that like works, you know?
All right, here's my idea for how to fix Halo. You ready for it?
Let's hear it.
All right, there's a Marines ship in the air. It's it's flying in space. And all of a sudden, like, we see it, like, zoom, like, just zooming by. And then all of a sudden, from behind it, this alien spaceship that we've never seen before is shooting at it. And the ship is... And then the ship is going onto a planet, and it just crashes. Boom, the roof comes up. A bunch of just regular Marines come out of it. They walk out. They look around. They said, he's got to be here somewhere. And another one says, who? The demon. We got to find the demon quick. So they start building this cave. And in this cave, you get this, like, this old military base with this light shimmering. And it's like, who is there? But at the same time, from behind, the aliens from the ship come in and start chasing them. Boom, 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 boom. And then all of a sudden, they come in. And all of a sudden, they hear, I need a weapon. And you all of a sudden see a Master Chief coming at him with a camera, with a gun, shooting the aliens.
I love it.
Taking control of it. And then basically, it's the demon coming back, and they bring him out of retirement. He doesn't want to be a space marine anymore. He doesn't want to be the Master Chief. He just wants to be left alone.
Halo, : Sins of the Father.
Oh, boom. Turns out the character you are is actually his son.
It's his son. Oh, gosh. Halo, : Resurrections.
I'm in.
Yeah, man. I'd play any interesting Halo thing. But, like the more time that we have further away from Halo Infinite, the more I am, like kind of not into it.
Yeah.
The more I think about it with less, like displeasure. Because I'm just like, anything, guys. Just give us anything. Seems like they're working on something new. I guess we'll see.
It's called a name change. They got to go through and change all those documents. Control F, 343, control, replace F, Halo. And they just messed everything up.
I think Halo Infinite was insecure. I think that they didn't understand what makes Halo work. Do you remember the end of that game? You were looking for a place called the Silent Auditorium. Do you know why it was called the Silent Auditorium?
No.
Because in Halo 1, there was the best level of that whole game is called the Silent Cartographer. Why was it called the Silent Cartographer? I don't know, but it sounded cool. Why is it called the Silent Auditorium? I don't know, but it's because it was in Halo 1. You know what I mean? It was just like, oh, that's kind of like, you guys couldn't think of anything else that was cool?
I mean, I think the big problem with Halo Infinite was they try to be everything instead of just picking a lane. Make it a multiplayer game. Make it a single player game. Make it an open world game, but don't do all three.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. Justin, I think that's going to do it for us. I know we were going to maybe talk about Ubisoft potentially being bought. The answer is, they say they're not. They say they're open to it. Of course they're open to it. If you were to give the CEO of Ubisoft $1 billion, I would be open to it too.
Yeah, I even half that. Give me $25. Give me a pack of gum. I will sell Ubisoft.
Yeah, I can do that.
Yeah.
Because if I'm the owner of Ubisoft, I'm like, can you guys stop screaming about a black dude being in Assassin's Creed? Anything to make you guys be stop. Anything to make this not my job.
Do I have to leave? Do you want me to leave? I'll go.
You want me to leave? Yeah, I'll do it for free. All right? It's just stop hearing about this.
Yeah, be better people and I'll leave.
Yeah, yeah. That's going to do it for us. Thank you so much for listening. If you're interested, you can join our Discord server. The link to that is in the description of this episode. You can support us on Patreon, like Jane Old, GKS, and Josh Durham. For just $3 a month, you can become a deluxe podcast producer. Like I said, we're talking about comparisons and talking about Zelda Echoes of Wisdom. You can catch that there. You can also follow us on Twitter at HitboxPod or rate this episode in your podcast player of choice. Justin, am I forgetting anything?
I need a weapon. Dad.
Permission to leave the ship, Captain. For what reason, Master Chief? I'm giving the Covenant back their son. Always remember, old games are old. Bye.
Bye. I'll stop recording.